Welcome to Lux's Litter Box. My name is Sean. Each week, my friend Cole and I talk about Davidson sports and A-10 basketball. But honestly, it's just a platform for Cole to rant about disc golf. Right now, we're in the middle of the A-10 2021 road trip preview. Each week, we talk to a different community member from one of the 14 teams in the A-10 about their school. You can check our Twitter, at @LLB_podcast, to see which week we break down your school. Thanks so much for joining us, and welcome to the road trip. Hey guys, what's up? It's Sean. So, just a heads up, this episode was recorded about 3 weeks ago. We've had some crazy technical difficulties with this. Somehow, I didn't notice that my mic was off the entire time, and so I had to go back in there and try to figure out what I was saying and re-record that. And then on top of that, I was pretty sick. That delayed recording by a little bit too. So, we finally got it up. We got it ready to go. It's a great episode, a great Duquesne preview. Really appreciate having Johnny from the Bluff Blog on for this episode. It was a lot of fun. Just know some of the references we make about, oh, this happened on the day we recorded. It's probably like 3 weeks ago. Either way, it was a lot of fun. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed the episode.
All right. Hello. Welcome back, guys. We are now over the halfway mark with episode number 8 of our 2021 road trip. And this week, we're going out west to Pittsburgh. We're going to talk about Duquesne basketball today. And I'm so happy to introduce our guest for today's episode, Johnny from the Bluff Blog. How are you doing today, Johnny?
I'm doing well. Just ready for the season. Appreciate you guys having me on. I'm excited to talk Duquesne in the A-10 just in general.
Yeah. So how about you tell them, I guess, what you do in the A-10 Twitter world and beyond?
I'm just a general Duquesne tweeter. I like to think I can generate conversation. We have a small fan base, obviously, a lot of older fans. So there's not that many on Twitter. So I try to aggregate some news as much as possible, give my opinions. I kind of mix it up with just some general tweeting and other sports tweets, but I try to keep it with Duquesne and just keep the rest of the fan base kind of abreast with the news, hopefully. But yeah, again, it's a small fan base, so pretty much everybody knows each other.
Yeah, a small fan base in Duquesne, but despite that, for those who don't know, Johnny's Twitter account, the Bluff Blog, was voted as the runner-up for the most popular mid-major Twitter account. So what was that like for you?
That was pretty fun. Just having last season was kind of a crappy season for Duquesne. So having that little, token at the end there, just with some off season, it was fun. I didn't expect to even be in a bracket like that because I only have 900 some followers. So it's nice to get there with the Gola boys, and it's okay losing to them because they have my favorite Twitter account, maybe on all of Twitter, not just the Atlantic 10. So it was fun. It was definitely a treat to be a part of.
Awesome. Well, let's jump into the episode. First off, what were your overall thoughts and reactions to last year's COVID season and how the Dukes fared?
Well, I had high expectations, but obviously, it's Duquesne, so I kind of always expect the worst, unfortunately, but kind of, what can go wrong does go wrong. But yeah, I thought it was going to be a good season with Marcus Weathers and Mike Hughes and Sincere Carey and Tavian Dunn-Martin, but it just never came together like I thought it would be. I didn't expect they were going to go to the NCAA tournament, but I thought during a regular season, maybe a run to the NIT was likely, which is unfortunate because now all those guys are gone and it's starting from the ground up again, which is just a disappointment with the roster turnover, but it happens. And I think they'll hopefully make the best out of it, hopefully better than last year.
Right. So you mentioned the roster turnover. Duquesne's losing Marcus Weathers, Michael Hughes, TDM. Aside from those players that are now leaving, was there anyone in the program from last year that maybe showed flashes, exciting, exceeded expectations that you're looking forward to seeing play, maybe even in a bigger role this season?
From last year, I mean, I really like Toby Okoni. I think he's really primed for a good season. He was up and down last year, but he has the makeup. He came from a great high school program. I really like what he brings to the table. I also really like Tyson Acuff. He got into a rough start last year, but whenever Sincere Carey left, he got more playing time and kind of got into a role by the end of the season. So I really am looking forward to those two guys. I mean, they're really not bringing much back. Hard with the expectations for returning guys. I kind of feel like we know more about the guys that are coming in just from their tape than guys that are actually coming back. So, and they got Mike Bukelja coming back and Austin Rotroff, but that's really, really about it. So I'm most excited about Okani. I think he can be a really good player for the program.
So I guess we can start transitioning into talking more about next year. So do you want to walk us through? Duquesne has a lot of people coming in, 4 transfers, 3 recruits.
Yeah, they got Leon Ayres from Mercer. Duquesne likes to recruit from the Detroit area, so he's originally from Detroit. He looks like he's kind of in the mold of a Chad Baker type player from last year. Long and rangy and can hit the 3. So that's something they'll really sorely need because they're going to miss Chad Baker. He brought a lot of energy, not always the best because he was getting teed up all the time, but I think he can be a similar player to Chad Baker. They have Trey Williams coming in who also looks to be in the mold of Marcus Weathers, kind of like a 6'7", 6'8 guy who looks like an NFL tight end. And he didn't seem to really get utilized well when he was at Indiana State. And Keith Dambrot really likes to run his offense inside out. So I think Williams is going to get a lot of opportunity and he could be a double-double guy on a consistent basis, just depending on foul trouble. I'm not too certain how he was in that area at Indiana State. They have another transfer, a Division II transfer, actually, RJ Gunn. He's also, he looks like an NFL tight end. He's about 6'7", 230, 240, and they list him as a guard. So he's also a guy, watching his highlight tape, I can't believe he was playing Division II, and I can't believe Duquesne actually got him if you know, it's a highlight tape. So you always have to take them with a grain of salt, but he looks like a guy who can really shoot and rebound and play some defense, and they need that. So they also got a couple of point guards coming in, freshmen. They got Jackie Johnson from Wichita area in Kansas, and then Primo Spears from Connecticut. I think Jackie Johnson was at Oak Hill Academy, and he was at Hargrave. He dropped 54 points against Oak Hill. So they're really excited about him. I think he's going to probably come in and be the point guard in day one in November. And then they have Primo Spears from Connecticut. His recruiting kind of took a backtrack. He had some major injury in high school, so he was a little undervalued, but he looks like he can be good. He's also a long player, long rangy. He's probably 6'4", 6'5". And then probably the biggest newcomer they have coming in is Kevin Easley from TCU. He was the freshman of the year in the Southern Conference 2 years ago, Chattanooga. Never really played much at TCU. He played mostly every game, but played under 20 minutes a game. So they think he's going to be really good. He was a top 100 recruit during his sophomore and junior years of high school. So I believe at one point he was even committed to UMass, or he was leaning towards them in high school. So I think this season's going to come and go as he goes, because he's really going to be the centerpiece, in my opinion, just from looking from the outside.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at Easley's stats at Chattanooga right now. And I mean, he shot a 40% clip from 3. That's crazy. I'm just really excited to see how he stacks up with other A-10 competition.
I think he's going to be a really good Atlantic 10 level player. They have him. They have 3 years of eligibility left from him. So hopefully he can exhaust all 3 of those, and hopefully all 3 at Duquesne, but we never know at this point. But yeah, I mean, anytime you can get a 6'7" guy who can shoot 40% from 3, that's going to be a big, big advantage. So I think he's going to be very good at this level.
So you mentioned that you lost someone before the episode. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we lost Maceo Austin just a few hours ago. He had originally left the team last year in probably mid-January, late January. It was all the whole season's kind of a blur, but he left the team at one point and then came back and played in the last couple games of the season. And then I'm not sure of the reasons, but there was rumblings of him leaving the roster for a little bit here. So he's gone. Looks like he was going to play 10, 15 minutes a game in my estimation. So he's a good kid. I hope he, you know, lands on his feet somewhere. He probably will. So, but for Duquesne, they have some depth at that position. He's usually playing the three, so they do have a lot of depth there. They have Easley, RJ Gunn there. Toby Alcani sometimes will play that. So they do have a lot of depth at that position. So if they could stand to lose one position, it was the small forward.
So speaking of losing people, this is just something I am curious about because I didn't really look into it. Unless my memory is like playing tricks on me, I remember like very early in the offseason seeing a video about TDM, Trayvon Dunmartin, saying that he was going to stay again. And now we know that he's transferring. So what was that all about?
I believe he got a Duquesne produced return video in March or April that he was coming back for his sixth year. But he apparently had a change of emotion, change of feelings. So now he's at Florida Gulf Coast. A guy like him is always a loss. He can shoot you into games and then he can shoot you out of games just with how streaky he is. But he's a good energy guy, sticky on defense. So it was kind of disappointing when he left. He's a fan favorite. You know, everybody loved him at Duquesne just with all the energy he brings. But again, like they have depth at point guard, even though it's young depth. They have three point guards on the roster. So I hate to say he was expendable, but out of the three seniors that could have come back for the sixth year, he would have been the one I would least want to come back. I would have wanted Mike Hughes or Marcus Weathers to come back over him. So it's still disappointing, but the guy's in their sixth year. He's got to do what's best for him.
Yeah, I mean, it just feels so crazy to say stuff like that, like a six-year senior or even a seventh-year senior. I've seen some of those before. But yeah, I mean, especially with him being I mean, he's almost had a whole other college experience, a college and a half experience. He's got to do what's best for him. So speaking of next year, we kind of use John Rothstein's power rankings for the A-10 just as a general basis. He has Duquesne right now at 10. Do you think that's a fair prediction? Do you think Duquesne could finish higher than that, lower?
I think eventually they'll exceed that. But, I mean, looking from outside, I can see why he would pick them 10th, and it's completely rational and understandable, and I couldn't disagree with it. Just with all these new pieces coming in, no cohesion coming back from last year, really, you have nothing to predict on. So, I mean, 10th, 9th, 10th seems about right. I think they'll end up finishing, you know, with the best they could finish 6th or 7th if everything comes together. But I don't think you can really predict them any higher than 9th or 10th right now just with all the unknowns. I mean, I usually don't take his, Rothstein's opinion that seriously, but I think he kind of has the A-10 pegged accurately, at least at this point. With all we know, but there's a lot of unknowns with the conference, with all the new rosters, new coaches on the bottom end of the league. So we'll see. I could see them finishing 6th or 7th. I can also see them finishing 9th or 10th. It's kind of a toss up on how quickly these new guys can gel together.
Also, it honestly should be a national holiday, but today is a very special day in the A-10 community. It is A-10 conference schedule release day. So overall, just looking at Duquesne's schedule, is there anything that really sticks out as a game that's really special to you or that could be interesting?
Always my favorite matchup is with St. Bonaventure because of their fans. It's probably Duquesne's biggest rival now that they don't play Pitt anymore or Robert Morris. So St. Bonaventure is really it. So both of those games with St. Bonaventure are on ESPN2. They have Dayton at home. So Dayton would probably be the biggest crowd, but St. Bonaventure always brings a ton of fans from Olean because it's only a three and a half hour drive. So that's always an exciting game. It's probably the best environment of the season as far as Duquesne home games go. So that's always my favorite. That's the one that sticks out. Obviously when teams like St. Louis and Davidson and Dayton come in, that's exciting. We haven't had VCU at home in 3 years because the game got postponed last year and we're on the road with them this year. So I'd say St. Bonaventure and then to a lesser degree, Dayton. And then I I think Richmond might be at home, but I'm not certain of that with all of their 30-year-old players. But but yeah, I think St. Bonaventure's got to be the top game. It's a good rivalry. The fans are outspoken. I love when they come to town.
Yeah, I mean, you're right with the 30-year-olds at Richmond. If, like, there's some kids that are six-year seniors that are getting, like, another college experience, the Richmond guys must be getting, like, their PhDs at this point.
I really like the Richmond kids. I like Chris Mooney. I think he gets a lot of unfair criticism, and I like their players. I'm a big Jacob Gilliard fan. Not so much on Grant Golden, but I like their team. I don't see why they can't win the league this year. I mean, it's going to be between them and Bonaventure, so yeah, I mean, they got a good group coming back.
Yeah, so I have another question. So we talked about expectations for this year, and you seem to, you know, not be too low but not too high on the team. A lot of people that we've had on our podcast, aside from being optimistic maybe about this coming season, have talked about the future seasons, how they think their school is, you know, coming, you know, is going to have like a renaissance, like Fordham said, or something like that. So if we look at Duquesne, you have, you know, Keith Embrots hasn't had a really terrible season yet. They've been pretty decent as of late. They have the new stadium, of course. Do you think that going forward that there's some optimism that Duquesne could maybe make a tournament appearance for the first time in decades?
I think there has to be some optimism, but there also has to be, from our fan base, a level of skepticism as well, just because of the way things always seem to play out for us. Whenever Ron Everhart was here, they were supposed to have a good team the first couple years, and they had some shootings. Then it never kind of came together. Just with this group, I really think if they can stay together, which is a big question mark, I think they have a tournament appearance in the next 2 to 3 years. Maybe I'm overestimating because I wear the rose-colored glasses, but I think if they can stick together, if they don't lose too many players, which is a bit, you know, it's a big question. So it's really impossible to predict just with all of the roster turnover that happens in college basketball right now. But I really do think if this group continues for the next 2 to 3 years, I think they will be a top five team in the league at that point, and possibly contend for an at-large bid if they can make the schedule competitive, a non-conference schedule. So we'll see, but it always comes down to which players come back, which guys leave. It's just the landscape of college basketball today. There's just no getting around it.
That about wraps up our talk about Duquesne basketball. I think we're now going to get into the more like fun part of the episode. We're going to go off-roading. Sean, do you want to start, or you have more?
Are you saying that this is more fun than talking about A-10 basketball? You are insane, Cole.
I'm doing it just for the weird questions and the meow noises.
Well, first question, what is your biggest Duquesne hot take? It could be about anything. It could be about stadiums. It could be about food. It could be about the basketball program, a football program.
I think probably my biggest hot take is, and I'm sure some people agree with me, just that, you know, we have the football team at Duquesne, and it's FCS. FCS or whatever is the lower level, but we play in a stadium that sits 2,200 people. So I think Duquesne really either needs to make a commitment to playing a little bit of a higher level stadium, or kind of go to a lower level as far as football goes. But they are bringing in a ton of money right now. They played TCU last week, got them, I think, a $6 million payday, somewhere around. I'm not sure of the number, maybe $6 million. But and then they're playing at Ohio U this weekend. So they're making money, but they need to commit to the program, put them in a better facility, just because Rooney Stadium where they play is pretty bad. So it's not a college football stadium. Most high schools in Pennsylvania have nicer stadiums. So yeah, that would be nice. And just going back to the payday, it's definitely not 6 million. I think it was 600,000. But yeah, I mean, I wish they would either commit to it, go all the way in or all the way out. So that's kind of where I'm at there. But obviously, I'm just a bigger Duquesne basketball supporter over anything else, men's and women's basketball.
You got to love those payday games, though. I mean, I remember a story where LSU was playing Troy, and LSU paid Troy $500,000 or something crazy, and then Troy proceeded to come on and beat LSU for their homecoming. So you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, you always see John Rothstein tweet, insert here, lost a bye game, the epitome of brutality or whatever. But yeah.
Yeah, I think Duquesne got the 600K, but it was so bad that they had to shorten the second half quarters to 12 minutes. So I turned it off after the first quarter. But
yeah, I think I'm kind of with you from a Davidson perspective too, in terms of the football team. But it seems like we got announcements recently that Davidson is trying to go more all in with their football program, get better facilities, because our bleachers are in a similar position of not really holding that many. And
I'm just telling you, Cole, we need better facilities for the conference realignment wars. It's going to take over and it's going to be Armageddon. But anyway, moving on, speaking of that TCU game, I actually saw a video, I think you actually retweeted it, of TCU fans just butchering Duquesne and the pronunciation of it. So that made me curious. What is the worst you've ever heard Duquesne pronounced?
Probably Duquesne, which I still get all the time. People just can't pronounce it. I mean, it's not that hard, but yeah, people call it Duquesne, Duquesne.
Well, and they should have heard the word Duquesne in school. I mean, it's taught in history classes, so. I mean, I don't know enough about the fort, but, you know, 7 years of war, it's an American fort, you know, or French. I don't know whose country. I mean, it's American history. Yes, I don't know that much about Fort Duquesne, but I'm sure you do.
Yeah, I mean, city of Pittsburgh used to be, you know, Fort Duquesne. So, you know, everybody in Pittsburgh knows it. But once you get outside of Western Pennsylvania, nobody knows what Duquesne is, which is why basketball is so important, because you have a – you can get to the NCAA tournament and even win a game or two, like you guys did back in 2008 when you went to the Elite Eight or Sweet 16, whatever it was. That puts your college on the map. Your applications go up. You make more money, makes you more visible. So that's why it's so important. But right now, I mean, you know, our athletic department does, you know, gets the amount of respect it deserves because it's not been great. So I can't blame the people in Fort Worth, Texas for not being able to pronounce it, but you would think they could read it.
I mean, all the like CBS Sports and ESPN commentators try to put you guys on the map by talking about LeBron James every game, but
yeah. It seems like it's some of the people get tired of it. We're just waiting for them to actually come to a game, so we'll see if that ever happens. But it's nice for the kids to get his apparel. It's a good recruiting tool, you know, harmless. So it's a nice thing to have. So hopefully he gets out sooner than later.
You know, we've been asking this question now for 7 episodes, and after hearing Curry Hicks-Sage answer, you know, it's like, can anyone top this? Should we retire the question? But, you know, we've gotten unique answers every time, and I'm excited to ask the question again. In a battle to the death, who wins? One of every A-10 mascot or 100 clones of Joe Lunardi?
I think it would be the mascot. I think if you have the St. Louis Billiken, he would automatically win just because he's so terrifying to look at. I don't know what to make of him. He's a nightmare. I think anybody could take Joe Lunardi out. I can't take him seriously. But
you hear that, Joe? Anyone, no, even me,
I like
and Sean.
Joe Lunardi. You guys could beat him. I like Joe Lunardi. I like when he's on the ESPN broadcasts and the St. Joe's broadcast, he's good, but I don't think anybody can beat the St. Louis nightmare Billiken. It's ridiculous.
Wait, so did you say earlier that you guys don't get to play Pitt every year anymore or something like that? And Robert?
We haven't played Pitt in 2 to 3 years now.
Wow.
That's on Pitt's end. As far as Robert Morris goes, we haven't played them, and that's on Duquesne's end. They won't play them for whatever reason. I'm not sure now because Robert Morris moved up and they moved from the NEC to the Horizon League. So I feel like there's no reason Duquesne and Robert Morris can't alternate home games every year. I think it's a good game. People in Western PA like it. It's always a better matchup than Duquesne and Pitt, just because Duquesne and Pitt's always been lopsided since I've been a fan. So that's the Robert Morris game is the one I'd like to get back, even over Pitt.
So next question. The theme of this podcast is the A10 road trip. And so with that road trip obviously comes music. You can't have a road trip without a good playlist. So what are your top three songs that you would have on a road trip playlist?
My number one would probably be anything by Shania Twain. I like You're Still the One. Feel Like a Woman. I guess it's kind of weird, but I love her. She's just, her songs are so good. I like anything really by Wiz Khalifa, just being from Pittsburgh. I really, really enjoy his music. I'm not a fan of like Black and Yellow. It just gets annoying, but so he would be at the top. And then my third one would be the song from the movie Euro Trip, Scotty Doesn't Know. That's probably my all-time favorite song, unintentionally. It's such a great song, and it's been able to be played back for, came out in 2004, for almost 17, 18 years now. I can listen to that song all day. So probably that would be up there with the Shania Twains.
I have one more. Well, I just noticed that the first touchdown of the NFL season was just scored. I don't know who scored it, like the player, but it was Tampa Bay. They're up 7-0 now as we record this. I know that you're a Steelers fan. Saw a little hot standings prediction with your least favorite team, the Browns, at number one. You have any hot takes or anything you're excited about for the NFL season this year?
I mean, I'm excited to see Najee Harris for the Steelers, you know, selfishly being a Steelers fan. I'm excited to see if Brady can still do it. He plays a safe style of quarterback. Obviously, he looks good in this game so far. He just threw a dime to Antonio Brown and then that touchdown. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him again. You know, obviously, being a Pittsburgh fan, he knocked the Steelers out of the playoffs several times. So looking forward to seeing if the Browns can live up to their hype. I think they're going to be the best team in our division. But I still don't think they'll be as good as Kansas City in the AFC. So really those two storylines, just because we're so centralized here in our region with Cleveland and Pittsburgh, we're less than 2 hours apart. So these are the two teams I pay attention to the most. So I'm anxious to see what the Browns can do, if they can come back from, if they can, you know, what they bring back from last season, if they can live up to their expectations, because they haven't had expectations since the early 90s. So it's kind of cool to see. They have great fans, even if I don't like them. So that's probably the number one storyline for me going into the season.
Yeah, I usually am not that excited about the Steelers. There's a lot of Steelers fans by me for no reason, and I find them all a little annoying. But I am kind of excited, not only about Najee Harris, but I'm hoping Deontay Johnson like stays healthy the entire year this year. I just think like he could be, you know, have a really breakout year, because he seems, you know, very talented. So I'm kind of excited about the Steelers offense this year.
Yeah, he seems like he's just always injured. He's been kind of like a China doll type thing, but he has the talent to be the Steelers' number one receiver. If he can cut down on his drops and stay healthy, I think he is the Steelers' best receiver over Juju and Claypool, who I don't think is really that good. So I think Johnson is their best receiver.
All right. I think that closes up. So where can they find you?
They can find me at the Bluff Blog. That's really my only social media at this point. I do have an Instagram page which has the same handle at the Bluff Blog, but I haven't posted on that. And then my website is thebluffblog.net, and I'm hoping to get some stuff on that in the coming days, just with the recent roster news and the schedule news. So those are the best places to find me, but most of my time is concentrated on Twitter, for good or bad. So
okay, so we have all of our guests and the episode with little Lux's litter box roar / meow. Want to give them your best roar or meow, Johnny?
Well, I can do a good meow. Meow.
Thank you guys again so much for listening. We had a great time recording this episode. Sorry that it was up a little bit late, and really appreciate all the Duquesne fans that listened to this, even though it was up a little bit late. So what's coming up next is we have West Pine Bills on to talk about St. Louis next Monday at the regularly scheduled time. That episode is a lot of fun as well. We've already recorded that, and it's good to go. My mic was turned on for that one. So thank you guys again so much for listening, and go Wildcats.